Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of the VC Bruna podcast, a podcast that provides a unique perspective of the startup world through the lens of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. I'm your host Digjay, and today I have with me Mayank Banerjee, co-founder and CEO at Even Healthcare. Even is a health tech company that partners directly with top hospitals to provide completely cashless quality healthcare to its members. Even is backed by marquee investors like Khosla Ventures, Founders Fund, as well as operator investors like Nikesh Arora, Kunal Shah, Nitin Kamath, and Tom Stafford. In this episode, Mayank talks about his path leading up to Even, choosing the right co-founders, the problem statement that Even is solving for, challenges faced in the 0-1 journey, attracting quality talent at the earliest stages of a startup, straddling between the short-term and the long-term vision, the importance of understanding the VC perspective when fundraising as a founder, and having a thesis about the kind of investors you'd like to have on your cap table. I absolutely enjoyed this conversation with Mayank, and I hope you enjoy this conversation too. So, without much ado, let's jump in and find out what Mayank has to share. Hey Mayank, welcome to the VC Printer podcast. Excited to have you with us today. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
No, thanks, Digjay. Thanks so much for having me on. Super excited to speak, answer any questions that you may have, and yeah, just be helpful in whatever way I can be.
No, absolutely. We have a long list of questions, but maybe we can start with a brief background about yourself for our listeners who don't know you yet. Tell us about your background and path leading up to Even.
Sure. So I have had a bit of a strange background. As you can probably tell from my accent, I have actually lived in the UK for most of my life. So basically, my family was from Agra, Nagpur. I was born in Agra, but my dad was a doctor and he ended up getting a job in the NHS. So when I was 6 years old, I moved there. I moved to the UK, ended up going to school there, went to college there. So I did what is kind of famous as very much a degree that teaches you to talk in some ways, right? So I did philosophy, politics, economics at university. And while I was there, I was also president of this thing called the Oxford Union, which is this strange debating society that is famous for essentially inviting a bunch of famous people to come and speak. And some of the people that I ended up interacting with in my term were people like Eric Schmidt, who had just retired as the CEO of Google, Jack Dorsey, who at that point was not quite the CEO of Twitter, was just at Square. But you interact with these amazing people. And the problem with a thing like the Union is because you're interacting with them one-on-one, you kind of convince yourself that, hey, they do interesting, amazing things. Why can't I do them? So ended up dropping out of college, actually, which is an eternal pain to my parents, to start a company. That company was a company called Compass News. It was essentially an attempt to change the way that people consume information, which it was a very, very ambitious goal. We raised a little bit of investment from people that I'm very, very grateful to. I met my co-founder, Mathilde, along the way. We did that. We ended up having offices in London and in New York. But unfortunately, I'll be very honest with you, we just never got that kind of breakthrough product market fit. Right. We're always growing quickly enough for it to still be interesting and close and always feel so close, but honestly, just never quite that breakthrough that you're looking for. So towards the end of 2018, we returned whatever money we had raised back to our investors, whatever was left, unfortunately, not very much. And then wasn't really sure what I wanted to do next. I think I realized that the common thread in my life has probably been to try and optimize really for kind of impact. And so I ended up coming back to India with the belief that in India is probably the best place in the world for someone like me, who I still speak Hindi at home, to hopefully do something useful that has a positive impact. So I moved back, spent a little bit of time kind of just getting to know the place, working as a consultant, a few things. And then, worked at a VC for a little bit called Entrepreneur First. And then started this company called Even with Mathilde and Alessandro, who's my other co-founder, Mathilde from my previous business, and also basically founding team, people like Ronak Cha and Anivesh Roy, who were basically there from day zero, and super grateful to be working with them. Yeah, that's a little bit on me and my journeys.
Awesome. That's, quite an incredible experience, and definitely, unusual for someone who's now building in healthcare. without, you know, prior, I would say, industry experience. And I think that's kind of interesting, you know, not just for you, but also your co-founders. So, you know, before we talk about you, and I also want you to share a bit about your co-founders and, you know, tell us, how did you come together as a team to start Even?
Sure. So Matilde is someone who I actually met when we were doing our previous company. So we actually co-founded Compass together with a couple of other really good friends of mine. Now, Matilde's background is, so she's Italian. She grew up in Rome, ended up moving to London to do a master's at the LSE, and then was working, running European marketing for Fox and Paramount, particularly on the influencer side. Mm-hmm. I met her because, you know, we were both in that kind of media journalism type space. Met her, we decided to do Even. Now, she's someone that I've known for the last, wow, like 7 years now. That's terrifying. we've been very, very close. We've lived together when we're doing Compass. It's like pretty intense. And Ale is actually someone who I met through Matilde. So they've known each other since they were 9 years old. They were best friends at school. I've always been like super, super close. Ale actually ended up moving to London as well. So he's also Italian. Ended up doing an undergrad in philosophy and somehow using that to pivot into a master's in machine learning and a PhD in machine learning. He also spent some time at Google DeepMind. And I'll be honest, he is 100% one of the smartest people I've ever come across. And all the way through that we were doing Compass, Matilde and I were basically like, oh my God, I'd love to work with Ale, right? It'd be so great. Yeah, eventually we convinced him to join us with Even. And yeah, us three have been doing it together for a little while.
Awesome. And, you know, if you were to like tell other founders, I mean, you know, it's been an incredible journey and a lot of serendipity as well at the beginning when you, how you met them initially. But there were some, you know, probably pointers or signals that you looked for or which convinced you that, you know, these are going to be my co-founders. So if you were to advise, you know, first time founders, what should they over-index on, you know, when they are choosing their co-founders?
Yeah, good question, actually. What would I over-index on? I think I over-index a lot on trust and, to be perfectly brutal here, how amazing I think they are, right? I think on the latter, as I said, I think these two are just incredibly amazing people that I would love to be able to like professionally work with them, right? I think that's really, really important. And in some ways, like we are doing something that's a little bit outside of all three of our comfort zones. And I think that's really important, right? Like every single person knows like two or three people that they genuinely think are just the most impressive people that they know. And I think try and work with them in whatever it takes, okay? And I'm generally someone that if people are actually truly amazing, it doesn't matter if your skills overlap, whatever, right? You're just putting those two people or three people or five people, whatever, in the same room can lead to amazing outcomes. The other part of that is, for me, it's very important that do I trust them and do we have the same kind of goals? I think that's the other important one, right? I think all three of us are fairly ambitious. We want to completely change the way the world works and we trust each other enough that actually we always will have each other's backs. And I think that combination is pretty crucial. I think obviously it's super helpful to be friends with someone, but actually, for example, when I first met Ale, he was someone new, right? But straight away, you just know that this is someone that, hey, actually, if we had, you know, been gone to the same college and spent some time together, I knew I'd have been really, really good friends with him. And that stuff can grow. And honestly, there is no better way to get close to someone than at least doing a startup with them, right? But you also learn all the bad things as well. And, you know, that's fine. You just compromise. But I think the key most important factors for me are, do I trust this person completely? And can I rely on this person? And do I think this person is amazing?
And the alignment of goals that you mentioned, you know, which is...
Yeah, that's the other one.
Absolutely, right? Critical.
One of the most impressive people I know, he is insanely great and he wants to chill. And fair play to him, right? Like he's someone that, you know, just is very happy doing a 9 to 5 and have, you know, taking 6 weeks of holiday whenever he can. And I think for me, I'm very much not that person. I have to work really hard. And yeah, but like, yeah, we would never have the same goals, right? And I think that's actually a really, really important one that people might understate, right? And I think in a startup context, it's probably like level of ambition.
No, awesome. I think that's definitely helpful. And, you know, which, you know, sets the foundation if you were to build something big and something that's going to grow along with you for the next decade. Okay. So, you know, I want to talk about the genesis now, right? Going from Compass News, working at a VC in between, and then thinking about Even Health. What was the genesis like? Was there a light bulb moment for you? Or was this something that you were, you know, always thinking at the back of your mind that you really wanted to solve a problem in this space?
No, I think this is, it's very much the latter, right? So to explain why, let me just tell you a little bit more kind of about me, right? And maybe my background. So growing up, all of my extended family was in India. And so I was very, very close to my family in India. And every summer we would go back to India, basically to spend a few weeks there, right? And from day one, I was super close to my Dauji, okay? And he was like very much like a second father to me. And I think probably the most formative experience of my life was when, unfortunately, Dauji was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Oh, for context, Dauji is my uncle. Now, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer when I think I was about 13 or 14. And so essentially for the next 3 to 4 years, a chunk of, you know, income was going to pay for treatment because obviously he wasn't insured. And I think the bit that was really crazy here is like at 13, 14, you're just starting to become an adult. Right, you're starting, not quite an adult, but you're starting to think about the world more than, you know, what am I doing today and stuff like that, right? Like how, and I think that's when you just realize how incredibly unfair certain things are. And just the fact that actually, because my dad moved to the UK, I had a certain lifestyle and indeed, like we had access to certain like medical stuff that actually, yeah, would have been game changing, something like mythology, both in a financial sense, but also just like generally. He unfortunately passed away when I was 18, or just about to turn 18. And I think that was probably really the point when I realized that, like, basically in my life, I would like to work on something that is meaningful and solves those kind of problems. So the initial plan, honestly, was to go to Oxford, then go to a PhD in econ, somewhere great, and then go work at the World Bank. Because at that point, that's how I thought you did positive things in the world, right? Obviously, you go to uni and you realize maybe the World Bank isn't quite what you thought it was. You learn a lot about how the stuff worked and, you know, ended up pivoting towards more on the political side and, you know, as a layer above it, like the journalism piece, right? But all the way through, the goal was how do you optimize for impact? Coming back to India was part of that long-term goal. And I think there, it was a few different factors of, one, I'm in India. I'm trying to buy my own personal health insurance, okay? And I'm, you know, I've lived in the UK for most of my life. We've had team members who are in the US who we were, you know, buying insurance for. And it was good. It's decent, man. Expensive, but good. And I come to India and I just think these products and policies just seem pretty terrible. And we couldn't quite understand why. And I think that you're then looking into something like the research around it, and you realize that every single year, something like 5.5 crore people, so like 55 million people, fall or face medical bankruptcy because of a one-off healthcare cost. That's a stat, but to me, it's a stat that is has a lot of kind of personal relevance and meaning. And I think you just realize how ridiculously unfair the world is, and what can you do to try and make a small impact on it. And I think, as I said, that was something that kind of all these different factors come together and you're like, yeah, this is something I'd quite like to do for the next 20 years of my life, or however long we get the chance, but I'm hopeful it'll be that long at least.
Yeah, no, I absolutely appreciate you sharing that background and, you know, the sense of purpose and how your formative years, you know, have led you to start even today. And I absolutely agree. It's a very critical problem to solve for. You know, coming back to even, right, if you could elaborate on the problem statement that you're solving for and what's the novel approach, I should say, you know, you're taking to solve this complex problem at this point in time?
Okay, so I think there are hundreds and hundreds of horrible problems that we in the space that we're operating in. But I think really the core problem is the business model of healthcare. If you are a private healthcare provider right now, you make your money by selling services. The more services you sell, the more money you make. And so India has a huge tendency to overtreat and over-medicate people, right? In the Indian healthcare system. That is combined with an insurance system, which is still very, very early, right? Like most things in India. And from an insurance point of view, you make money by finding ways to keep claims low. And so you have these two things that are directly in opposition with each other, right? The hospital wants to increase the costs, the insurance wants to keep costs low. And so if I'm the person that buys health insurance right now, invariably I buy a product with loads of fine print and terms and conditions that I don't fully understand. So effectively, you have these two models that are directly in opposition to each other, and the patient is the one that loses out. Our model is a little bit different, which is actually you can get both of these entities what they want in some ways, which is basically getting the hospitals and the service providers to take on some of the risk. And if they do that, suddenly they have an incentive to keep costs low and to cut, and more importantly, find ways to invest in the kind of preventative piece, right? Because it's far better to spend 5,000 rupees a year for kind of checkups and diagnostics and just tracking someone's healthcare than to spend a 5 lakh claim in 3 years' time, right? That's infuriating. And I think that's the piece that we're solving for. The other big benefit of this is if you can create a model which is designed to keep people healthy, actually, maybe you don't need to charge as much, right? So that kind of stat that I told you about this, which is, you know, 5.5 crore people who face medical bankruptcy every year. How do you make insurance and indeed healthcare cover cheaper? That's our fundamental goal, right? How do you cut down the cost of healthcare? Because if you do that, then I think good things happen and you make society a little bit fairer. But that's broadly what we're trying to solve for.
Awesome. And yeah, I mean, you're right. And it's primarily also to do, you know, with how the system is currently structured and the incentive between, you know, the different players. So, you know, solving for that, I think, is definitely going to be critical in, you know, addressing the 5.5 crore people that you mentioned that go through medical bankruptcy every year.
Yeah, I mean, that's really like what we're trying to do, right? How do you solve for that problem?
And, you know, just touching on to, you know, the previous point that you mentioned, founders coming in with, you know, a completely different background into an industry. I think we've seen that in the past in history as well. That approach has, you know, completely changed the paradigm in that space. We've seen that with Tesla. We've seen that with AWS. So, you know, I hope we talk about even in the same context in the coming years. All right. So, you know, talking about even and, you know, the phase of venture building that you currently are in, I think there's a term which is called the 0-1 journey, and you're probably in that journey and probably going beyond that, you know, one right now. What's been, you know, the biggest challenge so far from a venture building perspective in this initial phase since you started out in mid-2020?
Yeah, hiring. Always hiring, man. The only thing that matters in the long term is the quality of the people that are working on the problem with you, right? And I think actually in the very, very long term, the companies are the ones with the most talented people, right? And I think the people that you work with at the start end up hiring people like them, right? So making that right decision. And I think that's really, really important. The second part of that is the ability to move fast, at least in my opinion. Because I think the biggest mistake that I made in my previous company was thinking that you could think your way through a problem. But I've realized increasingly that actually you just can't. And it's a lot easier to just do things. And once you do them, you learn a lot more. So I think being able to do things very, very quickly and learn by doing, alongside that, having an amazing team to do it with. And I think those two things are often in direct contradiction with each other, right? Because if you have more people in the team, you can do things faster. And that's amazing, right? That's what you raise money for. But the problem is, it's hard enough to find one amazing person to work with. If you need to hire five of them in a short period of time, it's hard, man. Like that's probably the hardest thing for me. It's like knowing that actually we need to do more, but then also knowing that actually every person who we work with that we're not super excited by is going to end up killing us in the long run. And that's probably how I think about it.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely bang on, right? I mean, hiring is what I've heard from most founders. That's been the most critical challenge, especially at the early stage. But, you know, you spoke about your co-founders, you know, told us how amazing they are, but you're doing something fundamentally right to be able to attract those kind of people with you to be on this ride along the way. So, you know, if you were to look back, what do you think, you know, you've been able to do right to be able to attract, you know, that kind of a talent pool, especially at the early stages at Even?
I think there's two parts, right? Is you can be good at sales, right? And I'd like to think I'm not terrible. I'm probably okay. But I think a lot of this is just being generous, man. People are very, very stingy with both cash and equity. And our view is, as you know, founders, and indeed like now even as team members, right? Every stage, we'd all prefer to have a smaller chunk of something massive than a large chunk of something not that meaningful. And I think accepting that really, really great people have a lot of optionality and are probably also being sold. Either I'm betting that I am fundamentally better at selling than literally everyone else, and I don't think that's the case, or I just say, hey, I'm willing to be more generous than everyone else. And I think that actually, in a lot of the time, might be the case. I think it helps that we're working on a really, really meaningful problem. And I think we try and have an environment where we basically strongly believe that micromanaging is a waste of someone's resources. And if you're going to get amazing people, get out of the way. And sometimes that's difficult, right? Because you might disagree with their decision, but that's when it's important to get out of their way, not when you agree with it, because then it's easy. And all those things. But yeah, for me, it's just how do you be structurally better, right? And you be structurally more generous.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. You know, all those factors count in, you know, assembling a very good team, especially at the early stages. So, you know, at this stage, Mayank, you know, what do you think is a North Star metric for you as a startup today? And, you know, maybe a follow-up would be, why do you think this metric is important to, you know, build a strong foundation for even to scale up from here?
For us, it's quite straightforward, man. The number of lives covered. And I think alongside that, it's the, you know, the amount that people pay per life as well, right? I think, but for us, the long term is the business that we're in is optimizing for impact on a large number of people. In order to start to do the impact, you have to get a large number of people. And so that's kind of what we think about. The other piece that's really important for that is like, how strong is your depth of engagement with those people, right? Because I think it's very easy, not very easy, but it is easier to just say, hey, I'm just going to go like a really, really limited touch point with a really, really large number of people and be really happy with that. But actually, I think if you're going to meaningfully change someone's health outcomes, right, you need to be really, really in the weeds with them. And I think, yeah, so for us, it's the second metric other than the number of lives is like, how much are they paying us, right? How many people do we have a direct relationship with? And that's really important for us.
Yep. And, you know, and we all recognize that even is solving a very tough problem, and it's in a fragmented market, regulated market too, when it comes to insurance. And understandably, it might take time to, you know, scale this up. So as a founder, you know, how are you dealing with that dynamic of making a balance, straddling between both the short term and the long term, right? The short term vision of, you know, making sure the first market that you're entering, you're doing justice to it. But also at the same time, thinking about speed, thinking about scale, thinking about growth and the long term picture.
Good question. We know where we want to get to in the long term. We think the current strategy is the best way to get there, right? In some ways, are we happy with our approach? Yes. Are there bits that will frustrate us and slow us down? Yeah, of course. That's just natural, right? But you kind of accept those, right? That's already priced in. We think this is the best approach to be taking. Otherwise, we'd be doing something completely different. Once this stops being the best approach that we think we could be taking, we will do something different. But I think once you've accepted that this is going to be the way, you kind of just have to get through it, right? And grind through.
Got it. Okay. Mayank, with that, you know, I want to switch gears and talk about, you know, the fundraising experience at eWin, which is, you know, fundraising itself is another important skill set for a founder, especially when you're looking to build something which is going to be a venture scale company, you know, and it involves multiple rounds of funding if you want to make it that big. So I want to talk about the initial, if there were any initial rejections that you faced, and what are the learnings from those rejections and any changes in your approach that you had to make, you know, after getting that initial feedback?
Our fundraising journey has not been too bad. Like, we've been very lucky. I would say for me, the biggest difference is between this company and the last company, right?
Yeah.
I would say the last company, we chose a small and declining, like, you know, journalism per se is not something that people are often hugely excited to fund. And that actually made it very, very difficult. I would say with this one, it quite explicitly is clearly a massive market where you're trying to do something really, really difficult, right? And I would say, well, if you get it right, the impact is huge. And I'd probably say this time around, that helped a huge amount. I would say 90% of the people that we initially reached out to, we probably got no's from, but actually 10% is a pretty good hit rate. And we ended up with way too much demand and getting investors that I think are some of the best in the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think trying to understand the venture capitalist perspective as well. So the kind of business that we are in, we will need to raise a chunk of money and we will need investors that are willing to think of the long 10, 20 year plan. And actually, they just happen to be the really, really large funds. Because in order for them to make money, they have to return crazy multiples. And I think a lot of the time it's, you know, tailoring what you're saying to the right audience, knowing that actually when you're talking to a large fund with like multiple billions under management, you have to talk about the large big picture, right? Whereas when you're talking to a fund with 50 mil, accepting that even if they got it, they're going to get diluted, right? And so it's hard for them to make the economics work.
Correct.
And so if a fund's model is, I need to do own 10% for 1 million, accept that that's probably going to be a no, right? Because if you're trying to raise 3 to 5, it's just going to be very, very hard to make the economics work. But fundraising, I think it's just understanding the game that you're playing. And I think the fundraising game is a very different game to the actual building of the company game. I'd say that you play a game and you try and figure out the rules and play to win that particular game, right? I used to do a bunch of different sports. And I think some of that muscle memory helps. But actually, just because I can play cricket doesn't mean I'm any good at rugby, right? And you have to approach things in a very different way.
Yeah, no, totally. Going back to the basics and going back to trying to understand, you know, what the other person wants is absolutely critical to get, you know, the best outcome out of that discussion and conversation. And like you said, you know, alignment of long-term goals, the VC being able to, like, you know, have deep enough pockets for you to be able to raise subsequent rounds. I think that gives you a good sense of security, especially when you're building in a market where you got to fundraise and you know about that upfront. So having that clarity absolutely helps. Okay, just like investors have a thesis, kind of companies that they would want to back, startups and founders should also have their own thesis of, you know, what kind of investors they want to work with. So was there anything particular that you were trying to, like, look for amongst the investors that, you know, that you ultimately got on board on your cap table?
I think there is a certain type of investor that wants to build a company with you. And then there's another type of investor that accepts that your team is building the company and they are there to support them. I very much prefer the latter type. And the latter type essentially generally pretty hands-off. But at the same time, when you need their support, they're there, right? And they're super responsive and they do whatever you need to get done. Particularly because what we're building is so different, right? To if I was building a SaaS company, I would love to work with a B2B SaaS investor, right? If I'm building a pure play consumer social company, right? Or like an e-commerce brand, I'd want to work with like an e-commerce investor. I think what we're doing is there are very few like managed care investors. Yeah, so it's kind of just like, hey, we'll figure it out kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. I mean, I think what you over-indexed on is finding that alignment and what kind of, you know, portfolio companies they have is also a good signal of, you know, how and when they have backed those companies along the way in that journey. And I think that would be a good signal to also decide, you know, what kind of investors you really want to have on your cap table.
Yeah, I think the other thing is you can also balance it out, right? So you can have someone who's super, super fast and super, super hands-off, but then maybe that balance that out with, you know, an individual who might be an angel, but you know, has really, really deep domain expertise, right? And that person with really, really deep domain expertise might not be able to lead your round, but actually they're probably very happy to come in and you can make room. And I think trying to build a team of investors just in the same way that like, we would not only ever hire only engineers, or we would not only ever hire only doctors or, you know, designers and or business people. I think you build a team that tries to bring a little bit of everything. And I think this is coming back to understanding what the investor wants, because, you know, they need to win just as much as, you know, the team does, right? And making sure that you only work with people that you think you can actually deliver what they want. Because otherwise it's just unfair, right? Really, really take time to understand what are their goals? Can you help them achieve their goals? If so, great. Well, try and work with them.
No, absolutely. Love the clarity. And I'm sure, you know, this is going to be very, very helpful for a lot of founders that are, you know, just in the early stages of their fundraising phase as well. Mike, this has been super helpful so far. With that, I want to quickly get into our final segment, which is the rapid fire. I'll shoot some question and, you know, hope to get your honest, immediate thoughts on the same.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. One thing that you'd like to change to improve the state of the Indian startup ecosystem today?
More generous options for employees. I think making sure that if the company succeeds, people make a life-changing amount of money from it. I think that's something that a lot of people are stingy on. I'd say speed on everything, right? The ability to just move faster, I think, is good for everyone. And I think if more and more people should put that as the number one priority, especially investors.
Yeah, and hopefully, we're seeing, early signs of that changing, especially in the last couple of years. Next question, if you had to give a TED talk, what topic would you choose and why?
How you can create love. I was, as I told you, right, I hitchhiked like 20,000 kilometers when I was 18. Incredibly lucky, get picked up by like hundreds of people, driven, couch surfed, the whole thing. And, on paper, it's very lucky that a car stops, but you kind of have to get comfortable with the rejection of a lot of cars not stopping. So we had one wait, which was 17 hours. And try just standing by the side of a road with a smile on your face, sticking your thumb out for 5 minutes. Literally just time it. It's quite boring. It's quite annoying. It's very frustrating. Do that for an hour. Do that for 2 hours. Do that for 17 hours. And you will want to shoot yourself. But yeah, you get lucky. And the only reason you get lucky is because you put yourself in a situation where you can get lucky. So yeah, probably just do something on those lines.
Awesome. And look forward to that TED talk or the blog post, whichever comes out first.
One day.
Okay, final question. VCs and founders that you admire and look up to.
I think anyone who has bootstrapped a business is impressive. Who are the two that come to mind? Nitin Kamath, as well as, I think, Sridhar Vembu. Two totally different businesses. Some of them even have opinions that I might not agree with, right? But wow, I just got to say, fair play, man. Those two are damn impressive. And anyone just bootstrapping businesses, right? I don't even know how I think about doing it. It's like someone gives you a cheat code of venture capital and you're willing to say, nah, thanks, I'll do it the hard way. And then you do it in an even more impressive way. I just think that's, outstanding.
No, couldn't agree more. Absolutely bang on. Mayank, this has been, an amazing, amazing conversation, straight from the heart, no holds barred. And absolutely appreciate you sharing all the experiences and learning so far. Any final thoughts for all current and aspiring entrepreneurs that are listening to you through the podcast?
If you've listened to me this far, get back to building, do something. And if there's any way I can help, please just message me on Twitter. I think the DMs are open. I'm at Miyamki, or just drop me an email, which is probably, I'll be faster at responding. I try and be really low latency there. So Mayank, my name, at even.in. I'd love to be helpful in whatever way I can. And thank you so much for inviting me, dude. It's been really nice to chat. Thank you.
Likewise, Mayank. Thank you so much for taking out the time. Absolutely appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the VC Bruna podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please let our guest know about it. Share your thoughts on social media and let them know what were your key takeaways. We would truly appreciate if you could subscribe to our podcast on the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. This will help others discover the podcast. To get insights and to learn more about startups and venture capital, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We will love to hear from you there. You can find all episodes together on our website, thevcpreneur.com. We will be back again next week with another VCpreneur that is making a dent in the venture universe. Until then, take care and keep shining.